gorgeous images on the webpage ahead of our next guest. Do have a look, 9to Noon at rnz.co.nz/9to Noon. He's the Australian photographer Ray Collins, known around the world for his stunning images of waves as they complete their journeys to shore, images which capture the power and essence of the ocean. The gallery is on the webpage, as we said. It's highly recommended. Ray Collins grew up in Wollongong in New South Wales and first worked for years as a coal miner underground. A bad workplace accident left him unable to walk for several months, which is when he first picked up a camera and began swimming. Swimming out to surf, in fact, near his house, photographing a friend who was a surfer. His work quickly making it onto the cover of surfing magazines. He had that eye. For some years, though, his work has been on the ocean itself and capturing the complexities of water and light in a frozen moment all over the world. He's published 3 books, has numerous exhibitions, and features in the Netflix documentary series Fish People. Ray is with us from New South Wales. Thanks very much, Ray. Welcome.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
They're great images. I'm great, thank you. They're amazing images. And they're different. They're different from a lot of ocean photography. You have a purpose to what you do now. You want us to see something. What is it?
It is the moment that a swell line, which is made hundreds of kilometers away from a storm, it's the moment where that swell line ends its journey. That's basically where that's my studio. And that's the moment I want to show people the dissipation of the energy of a wave.
The energy is phenomenal, and particularly the forces that accrue in some of the waves that you get out to.
Yeah. Being amongst big kind of moving energy lines and just being in that turbulent kind of whitewash, you really have to kind of surrender yourself to something that's far bigger. So any preconceptions you have about what images you want to shoot kind of go out the window, and you're forced to be present and be in that moment and kind of just document what happens in front of you. So it's always pretty exciting. It's often challenging. And as you can see by those images, there's some moments that I'll never forget, and I was there to witness them, which is a feeling that I'll always have apart from the images themselves.
How do you do that? We often, when we head out to waves, are wary of our lack of control. We kind of know, we think we know where we can safely be and can't be. You go to places that many of us would not. And how have you learned to do that? How have you come to understand what the ocean does and what waves do?
Exposure to it. And going through a mental checklist every single time I go in the ocean about how to minimize the risk to an acceptable level, to a level that I'm comfortable with. I try and treat it as if it's the first time I'm doing it. Every time. That way it keeps it fresh and it stops me from being complacent about safety and whatnot. So I just, have a kind of a mental checklist, and then I envision kind of best case scenarios and worst case scenarios. And then, I step off the rocks or scale down the cliff and swim out to these kind of, I don't know, they're not really user-friendly kind of surfable or swimmable waves. They're more of kind of an underwater mountain where a wave breaks on the top of it. So it's a really shallow reef surrounded by a lot of deep water. And there's a lot to think about. There's a lot going on, but there's also, it's extreme clarity as you sit there and wait.
They are massive. And where do you need to position yourself both to be able to photograph what happens as they unleash, but also not to be smashed against rocks? if you describe what happens with wave motion and the unleashing of the forces, is there a name for where you park up?
I would call it the critical kind of decisive line of where you can be, and it blurs and it moves and so do you, and you overlap it and you step over it sometimes, and that is always in the back of your mind. I can recall times where I, mentally I'm thinking, this is great. I'm kind of doing real good, and I've got all my ducks in a row. And before you know it, like, you're upside down in the lip and getting both of your swim fins blown off and being pushed underwater for half a football field kind of thing. And it brings you back to earth pretty quickly, and it will strip you of your ego in a second.
So is there like a central force if a wave unfurls that spreads out laterally? So you're often slightly off to the side, shall we say, and we're getting an image just of that lip unfurling. Is there a way a wave breaks laterally and you're calculating where you can be?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So when you see the snapshot, the 1/1000th of a second of that image, that is usually the last step in what can sometimes be weeks or even months of planning. So what I do before I snap that image is I'm focusing my kind of internet browsing on storms and weather apps, and I'm tracking like a purple or red blobs basically. And if you can imagine throwing a rock into a pond and you get that radial spread of waves, that's what I'm looking at on a global kind of scale. So I'm following those blobs or the rock that you throw in, and I'm watching the spread of swell, and I'll kind of pinpoint my movement to where I think is going to be beneficial for photos. So I'm also cross-referencing it with sometimes Google Earth and kind of just knowing the geography and the geology of all the rocks, where the bathymetry is shallow and deep. So I'm really, there's a lot going on before I press a button. And what you said about looking at them sideways, looking into them, but being safe, that's a big part of sitting close to the reef, but not so close that I'm under them. And 99% of the time that works, 30% of the time or whatever. So yeah, it's hit and miss. You can take educational kind of guesses, but at the end of the day, the ocean usually has the last say.
It almost sounds like a physics PhD, but have you essentially learned it just by being and doing and gradually getting bolder?
Totally. Yeah, it's school of life, eh? That's what it is. It's when you have like a passion and you're dedicated to something, it's not a chore to learn. You want to, I don't know, get the specific information and learn from it. So I guess it's just trial and error, and you're not going to see the photos that didn't make it or the photos that were out of focus or blurry. So yeah, you can take hundreds to get one, you can take thousands to get one, and sometimes you can walk down the end of your street and get five amazing images with no forethought and no all luck basically.
Is it rapid shutter photography and you just pick the millisecond that's best? What's the actual kit you're using to capture these phenomenal images?
So I'm using, I use Nikon gear. Most of the images I've shot in the last 2 years are with a camera called a D850. So that's about 8 frames a second, which isn't considered really fast. There's sport cameras like the D5, which is 10 or 11 frames a second. So this is a bit slower per frames per second, but the resolution is a lot bigger. And a lot of my work, I like to print and, you know, get lost in the detail and have kind of a journey for people to follow when they're looking at one of my pieces. So I'm going for a bigger resolution rather than a quicker burst of images, because I feel like if you can't get the image you want, if you know when to press your finger down for the decisive moment, 8 frames is more than enough. But yeah, technology is moving rapidly, as it does with every part of our lives. And I think that we have it all right now as far as photography goes, but I'm sure there'll be more improvements. And in 5 years' time, I'll be looking back going, wow, I can't believe I used that old thing. So
what about the lighting? Because this is the other thing. You lead the eye to explore different aspects of what's literally unfurling. And how big is lighting in helping capture that?
It's essential. A photograph doesn't exist without light. Think about that. It doesn't exist. It's just black. So the two main ingredients in every shot that I take is water, obviously, with waves, and light. And the complexities and the intricacies that happen when those two things collide. So yeah, it's critical to my work. And I found that with the compositions, like you mentioned, leading your eye into the image, I'm colorblind. So I feel like maybe the supposed weakness I have about not being able to see color first and foremost as a strength, I feel like maybe my kind of eye has progressed maybe, and I have strengths in other areas because I lack in one thing. So maybe that's the way I choose to look at it anyway. So
you mentioned there are some that you will just never forget among many. I don't know what the reasons are for that, other than it was maybe the experience or just the shot you got. But tell us of a couple of them, unforgettable experiences.
Sitting on a flotation device, a kilometre off the coast of Iceland, and it's minus 20 degrees, and it's snowing in the ocean, and everything's white behind you, and just that kind of feeling is, it's hard to convey that through a photo, because the person who just looks at the photo and who wasn't there for the backstory of it are just like, wow, that's a pretty picture. But the feeling and the memories that I have from being in those moments, it's gonna be with me till I'm an old man. Like, there's no, the images mean something to someone, and that's what art is. You bring your own interpretation to it. And I really encourage people to kind of abandon what they think wave photos are going to be, because it's not all palm trees and white sand. It can be this brooding, unnerving kind of ominous shadow that rises from the depths. And yeah, like you said, I'm very connected to those moments. And some of them, it's just because someone was with me that we shared this moment. Like, I remember taking my sister with me a couple of times, and just exposing people to it in real time that have never seen this kind of stuff before is pretty special. And just sharing those moments is kind of, they're the little sweet spots that make kind of life worth living, if you ask me.
We all see the ocean differently, whether we watch it from the shore and it's just little sort of piddling waves at the end of a flat piece of ocean, or whether we are out in it sometimes and feeling that immense power where we know we are really entirely at its mercy. Do you have a physical experience and a psychic experience out there that can only be felt by those who get out in this extraordinary force that is the ocean?
Well, in a way, I have no before and after to kind of measure my experience, because the ocean is kind of all I've really ever known. My first earliest memories were just kind of being kind of submerged, being on my mum's back even, and her just gently going underwater and me just looking around and feeling this kind of, I don't know, new world, this weightlessness. So growing up, my father actually committed suicide when I was a young boy. So I felt like the influence that a male kind of role model may have given me, I feel like I got those lessons from going to the beach, you know, when I was feeling some kind of way, feeling sad or depressed or upset or celebratory or anything, I turned to the ocean. And in return of that kind of investment of time, I feel like I got lessons, lifelong lessons in respect, you know, humility, patience, and how to kind of go with the flow. I feel like, it's been a great teacher. It's infinite, and I learn from it every time I go into it.
It's almost embracing, is it? We don't talk about the ocean as being alive, but in some way it is.
It's critical to our survival as human beings. It's we are on planet ocean.
Yeah. You're starting out your working life in the mines. Was that a case of, in this town, this is what everyone does? Like, what was the path to go the complete opposite of the ocean and to go underground?
Well, you guys have places like Greymouth. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, the West Coast. Yep.
I've actually been there when I was doing a van trip around the South Island, and man, I absolutely love New Zealand. Absolutely love it. And also the leadership, the progressive, compassionate leadership is admirable as a global citizen. But yeah, so to bring it back to my local area, the town I live in is the whole community is the path you take is, you know, school, sport, coal mining, retirement. So yeah, it is the well-worn path, and the mines are a couple of kilometers away from the ocean. So there is this kind of black life underground, and then there's this blue life in this expanse of Pacific Ocean. So it is the well-worn path, and a lot of my friends are still there and yeah, doing their thing.
It's often another one of those life moments, isn't it, that can break either way. A really serious injury in a young guy, a physical injury that prevents him doing what provides a source of meaning in his life. What happened to you that was actually to lead to this extraordinary shift in direction?
Well, it's a cliched kind of response for a reason, and that's because cliches are often true, but it was the biggest blessing in disguise. I trod in a pothole at work, and my work was about 1 kilometer down in a cage and about 20 kilometers in. And when I walked into this pothole, my whole kind of body weight buckled over my knee. And there was a really kind of not a very nice sound, a kind of crunch, pop, twist. And I kind of laid there immobile in the middle of basically nowhere by myself, alone, with a lot of time to think. And kind of, I remember just being obviously in a lot of pain and just thinking like, all right, you're fine. You're not going to die. That's good. Just concentrate on your breathing and just be present, and someone will be coming past here at some stage. And one of my colleagues underground happened to see me and got the underground ambulance, and that's it. Like, took me out and kind of started my, I don't know, BC and AD of my life. That was the moment my life changed. I didn't realize it, not for a couple of years, but that was the turning point. And it was, yeah, the blessing in disguise that I kind of mentioned earlier.
Was this what started the interest in photography? Was it during rehab?
Yeah, I had my usual routine had been shaken to a standstill, kind of like, I don't know what we're going through globally now with this pandemic, but I had this time and it was not in my normal routine, and I had to do something mentally because physically I couldn't do much at all. It was my right knee. So I couldn't drive. I could barely walk. I could hobble on crutches. And I just thought, well, I'm going to pour my energy and time into something that I've kind of wanted to have as a hobby. And photography was that kind of outlet of expression. I jumped in a taxi and went to the department store, Harvey Norman, and just bought a black camera because it looked like one of the professional ones. And that was my organic entry into the world of photography.
Sometimes it's just doing something, isn't it? It's just starting something and look where it goes. And it went so quickly, Ray. How quickly did you start taking photos that ended up on the cover of magazines?
Oh, man, it's crazy to think about now looking back in hindsight. But I kind of told my sister when I bought this camera and this water housing that I hope to get like a postage stamp size image in a magazine, and I'm giving myself 12 months. I feel like I can, you know, maybe snag something in that 12 months. And within, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe 8 weeks, I got the cover of Australian Surfing Life. Oh man, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget walking into Winoona News Agency and having that image of my friend, who was not a professional surfer, on the cover of Australia's biggest magazine. That's definitely a moment that will stay with me forever. And that opened up doors of then going on to shoot not only my friends on a local level, but I don't know, guys all the way up to Kelly Slater, and that kind of level and respect amongst the surfing community. He actually was kind enough to write the intro to my first book. So This is the guy that was laying on his back in the coal mine, wondering what was going to happen. And now I'm talking to my brothers across the ditch, my brothers and sisters, the Anzacs. So I'm just on this ride and just waking up and starting again, starting over, and look, trying to look at things fresh in every aspect of my life, not only in my work, but just in my experiences as a human being.
With that early success, did you discover you had an eye, and no matter how much work goes into it, and we've heard all the work that goes into it, months of work, does a photographer, a brilliant photographer in the end, have an eye?
There's billions of people on this planet, and we all have an individual outlook on things. We all have our own experiences and our own genetics and DNA that makes us individual. So yeah, we as people are able to have self-expression and creativity, and that should be different from the person next to you and the person down the road and the person in another country, because it is those things, your individuality, that is your strength. And if you can tap into that in any way, whether it's baking cakes or knitting or whatever, that can be your gift. And if you like doing it and you enjoy doing it, and you know, like, embrace it, embrace your story, warts and all, and you are the sum of your experiences. So I think that we all are creative, and we can choose to manifest that in a visual way, or you know, like hosting a radio station on RNZ. You know, there's people who do what they do, and they give to the world.
What I did hear another say was the real shift came when the surfer went out of the photo, and that's where you were able in your photography to do things that perhaps are pretty extraordinary. The surfer is a focus, right, or an anchor point in the image. What changed when the surfer was no longer there?
When the surfer was no longer there, it took away a sense of scale. And that's when your mind can put its own end on things and its own explanation on things. A lot of the times my waves are just, they haven't done anything yet. It's the anticipation of what's going to happen that lets you, that kind of captivates you, I feel. And like I mentioned earlier, like, art should promote a feeling. It should make you question it. It should make you question it. And then, you know, kind of maybe even question yourself. I know it sounds pretty deep, but that's removing the surfer opened up infinite possibilities, because you're pigeonholing your image to that guy with the Billabong sticker or the Quicksilver sticker on his surfboard. And in 6 months' time, in 6 years' time, that's going to age, because fashions change, people change sponsors. He had long hair now, he's got short hair there, whatever. That they're snapshots of an era, but the ocean is infinite. The ocean doesn't date, it doesn't age. It kind of obeys no real law. And all this talk, I'm getting excited to go and swim after this. This has been really great so far.
I'm going to let you go, but there's one other thing we should say, which is you've mentioned the artistic component of this a lot, and it's evolving as well. You've begun collaborating with artists to produce cinemagraphs, which is a blend between photography and video, and it's quite mind-bending as well as beautiful. How is it actually achieved?
So my co-creator, Armand Dix, he's from Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and he is one of the best creators of this new kind of technology. So he's getting a high-res image of one of my shots and overlapping it in a slightly, not over the top exactly, but slightly off. And he'll do that thousands of times. So when you can press play and actually make them animated in a way that they're kind of endlessly looping, but not breaking. And it's hard to kind of explain it on radio, but I suggest that anyone listening, if they look at The Infinite Now and Elemental, they're two of the movies we've made, they can kind of see more of what we are talking about. The music was scored by the Rotterdam Philharmonic Orchestra, and they created a custom soundtrack to These Waves Moving. And yeah, it's, I don't know, it's different. It's definitely different, and I kind of like it. I like different.
Thank you, Ray. There are some links that give people a much better idea than words can of what you do. Absolute delight talking. Sounds like you're due to be heading out there. Enjoy. Thanks so much, Ray Collins.